I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Race, policing, inequality. This hour, we'll speak with two Baltimore City public school teachers about how their classroom conversations have changed in the year following the Baltimore uprising. What have students shared about their perceptions of police? How have the issues raised by Freddie Gray's arrest and death been incorporated into lesson plans? One Baltimore class connected with students on the other side of the country, in Washington State, answering questions about how the riots affected them and their neighborhoods. Plus, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra celebrates its 100th anniversary with a premiere of a film and symphony about the city's storied past and its recently turbulent history. We'll talk with composer Kevin Putz about how last year's unrest shaped the project. That's Midday, after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for tuning in. Tomorrow marks 1 year since Freddie Gray, a 25-year-old man from the Sandtown Winchester neighborhood, was arrested. When the police van arrived at the Western District Police Station, Gray was found unresponsive, then transported via ambulance to the University of Maryland Shock Trauma. With Gray in a coma, protests began outside the police station. On April 19th, Gray died from what doctors deemed was a severe spinal injury. Protests continued, and then on April 27th, the afternoon of Gray's funeral, rioting began. Two Baltimore City public school teachers are here with us to tell us about their experiences in the classroom then and in the year since. How did their students react? How did teachers incorporate the issues raised by the protests and rioting, issues of race, justice, and inequality? What did they hear from the community when they went out to clean up after the riots? I'm joined today by Corey Gillis, a sixth grade mathematics teacher at Calverton Elementary Middle School in West Baltimore. Welcome to the show.
Hello, nice to be here.
And Jeray Kelly, a ninth grade mathematics teacher at Benjamin Franklin High School at Masonville Cove, who previously taught at ACCE Academy in Northwest Baltimore. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I want us to hear from some students. These are not your students, but I'd like us to hear part of what WIPR reporter Jonna McCone heard when she visited a different school, City Neighbors Charter School, back last April. We'll hear two students' thoughts about how people perceived teenagers after the rioting.
I got upset because when Stephanie Rollins Blake got on national TV and called us thugs, I'm not a thug. When I got out of school Monday at 4 o'clock, I was home. I'm a young African-American child who is 16 and I'm still in school trying to do the right thing. I want to become something in life. So you putting that thug slang out on the edges, that make people looking at us bad. And we already, us as African-American kids, we already get labeled as, oh, being unsuccessful. We're not going to make it in life. We live in the hood. We don't have nothing. So being called a thug was just like disrespectful to me because I'm a African-American who trying to become something in life. So I decided that I was going to start a hashtag, I'm not a thug.
Personally, it saddens me to know that, you know, I'll never be able to walk the streets the way I did last week again, you know. I remember I was at 7-Eleven this morning getting my usual, you know, something to drink, donut, breakfast, something like that. And then, you know, it was a cop in there, and he gave me like the dirtiest look.
Two students from City Neighbors Charter School last April. So, Corey and Jeray, let me ask you, do these comments sound familiar to you from your conversations with your students?
They certainly resonate with me. I remember I was speaking to my students almost immediately after the events occurred. It was on that Wednesday because we weren't in school on Tuesday. And
Tuesday was the day after the rioting.
Right. No, but there was a day in which we were not in school.
Right. And so it was Wednesday when you were back together.
Right. And during a conversation, a student's response was, they're trying to kill us. Right, they referring to the police. And that took me by surprise, and it resonated, and I kind of paused in my steps. because not all police are bad people, but that's the perspective that they begin to have when they see things like the Freddie Gray incident, in which someone's innocently killed. And so, you know, it was just surprising to me and shocking, and it took me by surprise.
Tell us a little bit about your own background, Corey. You're not from Baltimore.
I'm not. I'm from the Bronx, New York. I grew up in a housing projects with five brothers, two of which were my blood brothers. I have a twin. I have another brother who's 11 months older than I. And then I have three adopted brothers who lived in the house with us, with my foster sister. She was our guardian. Very eventful. My birth mother and father, they were, you know, cocaine addicts, drug addicts, and they gave us up at an early age. And so we lived together in Edenwald. It was a project housing community. And so I went to an urban middle school. I went to an urban high school within the Bronx.
I see. So that's part of what you, when you heard this student say they're trying to kill us, mm-hmm. you're bringing a background which is similar in some ways but different in many
ways. I immediately went back to where I came from, just thinking about how in my community they had like the police like quarter set up with this big bright shining light, constant foot patrols by police officers, you know, just it's like these places are just so similar in that regard.
But still you were surprised to hear a student say they're trying to kill us.
Yeah, because, you know, when it's something that you're living, it almost becomes the expectation for you. And it was different looking at it from a third perspective or from an outside perspective. And as an adult, it was definitely different. Definitely different.
I want to continue that, but I want to pull Jure into the conversation. Jure, you're not from Baltimore either.
No.
Tell us where you're from. Tell us a bit about what you were bringing to this experience.
So I come from a very different background than my students and from Corey. I grew up in a suburb outside of Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. And so I think what's important, you know, for me and for others, maybe not from Baltimore, who are looking at this from the outside, is once you go into these communities with the blue lights, a lot of police lights, a lot of policing in general, that was really powerful for me. And I think other people.
When you first came to Baltimore.
Yeah.
And you've been teaching 4 years.
Mm-hmm, right? Yeah. And once the students started talking about their interactions with the police that I heard long before Freddie Gray, mm-hmm. right when I first started teaching, I immediately went to that environment. And I tried to understand where those comments were coming from based on their environment that they were in. Because it was something that I couldn't understand, and I didn't understand until I kind of was in it.
And so looking back to that Wednesday when you were back with your students, mm-hmm. is there something that sticks in your mind that surprised you, or did the comments you heard from your students that day kind of fit into where you were expecting they would be after the eruption in Baltimore?
Some of their comments surprised me. I think the just the breadth of different reactions and experiences surprised me, but all of their comments really fit into this narrative that, you know, had been already kind of being written throughout the past years.
So for those of us who didn't have that experience, how would you, can you summarize that narrative or give us some entree into it?
I think if I had to summarize it, I think just, I wouldn't say, you know, every Baltimore City student has a really negative opinion of the police. Many don't. Many do. And so I think the summary of that narrative is that they're aware of the police and they all have an opinion, a very strong opinion. Whereas for me growing up, I knew who the police were. I knew what their purpose was, but that was it. I didn't really have an opinion either way because I didn't interact with them growing up. But these students do have that interaction, and they do have an opinion. And I think that is the summary, is that every student has an opinion, every family has an opinion, and it's very present in their lives.
That is Jeray Kelly, a teacher here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Corey Gillis. Are you a parent who was impressed by how teachers helped your child digest what had happened in Baltimore a year ago, or were you frustrated? Join our conversation. Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. You both, if I understand correctly, you both took part right after the day after the riots in cleanup.
Right.
Tell mm-hmm. me what you picked up from the community. And clean up in the neighborhoods where your students are from. So what sticks with you from that day?
There was definitely a sense of unity. I know members of my school, and again, I'm at Calverton Elementary Middle School, members of my school got together and went and cleaned up. You got a sense of unity, a sense of community. You just felt like you were making everything better. And you knew that from this experience, you could only go up. Right. I know definitely for me, once we got back to the school after cleaning up, there was more of a sense of togetherness. We had a group town hall meeting to have discussions, in addition to small breakout sessions. And I just felt as teachers, as people who were invested in the work, I think we were able to come together and do that.
Jeray, what was the cleanup experience like for you?
I think very similar to what Corey said, this idea of togetherness, and the kind of area of North Avenue where it happened and where we were cleaning up is where a lot of my students lived, maybe not on North Avenue, but on the mm-hmm. side streets. And so I was able to visit their homes and check that, you know, their family was okay. And that was really powerful and a really bonding experience that I had with my students' families. And that I really appreciated having that opportunity.
So what was going through your minds at that point, knowing you were going to soon enough be back in the classroom with students? Did you have in mind how you were going to discuss it? Did you think it was your job to discuss it with the students? Did you think you were going to have to, that was going to change how you taught? What was going through your mind during that day when classes were not in session?
So at my school is predominantly minority, so African American. I felt it was perfect for me. I felt I could relate directly to the students. While I'm not from Baltimore, I think the Bronx and Baltimore has a lot of similarities.
Yeah, but you're a math teacher.
Absolutely. But what does that mean?
I don't know. So you tell me.
So for me, talking about the riots and the unrest from the first day, math took backseat to that. All right. So I wanted to make sure that first and foremost, we were getting rid of any fallacies or, you know, misinterpretations and tried to relieve my students of any negative thoughts and perspective. And so that led to a lot of conversation and discussion. My conversations primarily student-led and focused. While I was bringing the topic of the unrest at hand to the students, I also wanted them to lead the conversations. That's why our primary focus of conversation started with police officers. Then it went to housing and population and things like that. Then it went to the comparisons between like Mandom and Mall versus the Gallery and the police presence in both of those places and just the differences between how both malls were secured and handled. And that, from bringing out those conversations, allow us to bring in the mathematical portion and how that affects economically, how it affects from a population standpoint. So, you know, focusing on that one aspect brings out the mathematics, and then you can have that mathematical educational conversation along with some type of social positive reaction.
We need to take a short break here, and when we come back, Jeray, I want to ask how you envisioned talking this through with your students. We're talking about teachers and how teachers taught and how their teaching was changed after the unrest in Baltimore a year ago. We're with Corey Gillis and Jeray Kelly, teachers in the Baltimore City Public Schools. You can join the conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. Let's listen to teacher Brianna Carter speaking to her first period 10th grade social studies class at Digital Harbor High School last April.
When does it cross the line where this civil disobedience no longer seems to be seeking justice, but it goes a little bit too far?
When it turns into a riot.
What's the distinction between a riot and a protest?
A riot would be messing things up, like crashing cars and stealing and like basically fighting and all that other stuff. Protest is when you're like, you have your pickets up and you marching and you marching for something you believe in.
Teacher Brianna Carter speaking to her first period 10th grade social studies class at Digital Harbor High School last December. I thought it was April, but it was last December. WIPR's Jonna McCone visited Brianna Carter's classroom in December to talk about how April's unrest had affected her teaching. With me in Studio A, Corey Gillis, a sixth grade mathematics teacher at Calverton Elementary Middle School, and Jeray Kelly, a ninth grade mathematics teacher at Benjamin Franklin High School at Masonville Cove. We're talking about how they navigated tricky conversations with their students in the wake of the unrest in Baltimore. And I should actually, before I give you a chance to tell us how you approached it, people may be wondering, how is it that you both ended up teaching in Baltimore? Jeray?
Sure. I applied to the Urban Teachers Program.
What is the Urban Teachers Program?
It is a four-year teaching program. The first year, you are a resident teacher. So you're placed in a classroom with a mentor teacher. And that whole first year, you're just learning how to be a teacher. And you're also taking master's classes. So you get your master's after the second year. And then you have 3 years of teaching. You become a Baltimore City teacher.
And so you started that 3 years ago. And
yeah, almost four years ago.
4 years ago.
Yes.
So you're now an alumna of Teachers, or are you still in it?
I will be come June 20th.
I see. So You're still part of it. And Corey, you are in your second year.
Right. I'm in my second year. I just completed my residency year last year. I'm in my first year with Baltimore City as a teacher of record.
Meaning you no longer have a mentor teacher in the
right.
classroom with
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
I'm sure you have mentors you turn to.
Oh, of course.
So, Jeray, the day after the riot, when classes were not in session, you were participating in cleanup, and what was going through your mind about how am I going to talk to my kids about this, or was it obvious to you?
That question was going through my head. I knew it was my duty as their teacher to be able to hold these conversations, and I think the thing that I really came to focus on is that they're the experts of this, not me, and so it's my turn to kind of shift that dynamic in the classroom so that the students have that space to have respectful dialogue, to really make sense of what is happening and construct their own meaning. And I'm really the facilitator, and I'm listening and learning from them.
And so that's what you did when you got back in the classroom?
Yeah, I had a list of guided questions for a conversation.
A list you developed on your own?
Or? I developed on my own with other teachers during the cleanup. I asked the parents what they wanted me to ask the students and how to guide that dialogue. And then in the next kind of subsequent days, we developed an inquiry unit where we developed questions together, and then I was able to give them resources to help them answer those questions.
What kind of resources?
I just went online looking at articles about the history of Baltimore, the history with police interaction and brutality, and we also, so I was really fortunate, I think, because I was in a self-contained classroom, which means that I taught all subjects. And so we were able to have the reading and the dialogue, but then we were also able to, for example, we found the median income of every neighborhood in Baltimore, and we compared them, and we talked about how poverty can lead to violent interactions and policing and different things like that. And so I had a lot of room to do a lot of work with the students.
Lorenzo is calling us from Baltimore. Lorenzo, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I called because I want to commend the job that the teachers in Baltimore City do, especially during that situation. A little bit of background. My wife is a high school teacher there in Baltimore City, and she teaches right in the middle of the neighborhood there. I'm African American. I grew up in the inner cities, not in Baltimore, but in another state. But, you know, grew up like a lot of those kids. My wife is Asian. She was actually brought to America to teach Baltimore City kids because they couldn't find teachers who wanted to come to Baltimore City. So she came to America from Asia, I won't say which country, but to get a job. And she came here and just fell in love with these kids. And it's part of the reason that I fell in love with her, of course. But during this time, during this whole issue, she was preparing herself. She teaches science. So you wouldn't think that she would have to talk about this stuff. She did. She prepared herself, kept in tune with what was going on, and she was really a little bit stressed because she was worried about how her kids were going to deal with all this stuff. But she told me, each night and, about what she did and how she talked to the kids. And so many times in these kids' lives, the teachers are the only people that they have to talk to, the only people that listen to them about these things, and the only people with such matters. So I was really proud of her and of how she handled it, because she was handling kids just like me, when I was young. And I'm really proud of these two young teachers you have here and how they got involved and how they did what they needed to do to help the kids out. Because, when it's all said and done, it's about the kids. That's what it's all about. It's about our future. So
Lorenzo, thank you,
teachers, keep up the good job.
Lorenzo, thank you. Thank you for the call. One of the things that particularly interested me about Lorenzo's comment was his focus on his wife's ethnicity. And he didn't say whether he thought that was going to be a problem or not. But let me turn to you, Jeray, because listeners may not have picked up that you are a white teacher. The ACE Academy you were teaching in at the time of the unrest in Baltimore is a magnet school, right? So there's lots of different kids. But was this a touchy topic for a white teacher to be talking to students about?
I think that if this had happened my first year or my second year, it would be more touchy. But because I had known the kids for so long, at that three years with the same kids, because I taught 6th through 8th grade, so I was teaching students who were 8th graders who I had been teaching since 6th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really didn't, for me at least, it wasn't an issue. But I can't speak for other teachers. And Baltimore City is a city with a lot of teachers who are not from Baltimore.
Sure, sure. That is Jeray Kelly, a 9th grade, I said mathematics teacher, but you don't teach just mathematics. Or are you teaching
math now?
Now you're teaching. Jeray Kelly, a 9th grade mathematics teacher at Benjamin Franklin High School in Masonville, previously taught at ACE Academy in Northwest Baltimore. And Corey Gillis, a 6th grade math teacher at Calverton Elementary Middle School in West Baltimore, here on Midday on WYPR. We're talking about how their classes were affected by the rioting a year ago. You can join the conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. Arame is calling us from Baltimore with a question I think that many of our listeners may have. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for Brianna and Corey. I know the riots happened because this young man and woman were overwhelmed about the situation, socioeconomic. Now the question is, what are they doing for healing? Because we know they were hurting because of police brutality and the socioeconomics and everything. So my question is, what are they doing to moving forward for the student? Are they providing jobs? Are they providing support for these young children, for these young men and women? Because it's good to highlight a problem. The problem is here. We clean. We ask questions. But moving forward, we know teenagers after school need help with homework. They need their little 8 hours or 10 hours a week or 20 to buy their, their little clothes for or their little food and snack. What these two teachers are doing as far as healing, addressing the socioeconomics and their care.
Amory, I appreciate the call, but I just want to make sure clear. You're asking what the teachers are doing or what the communities are doing to solve some of these problems.
Both. It doesn't matter. I just want to feel the situation.
What the situation is like now.
Moving forward.
Let me see what they have to say. Thank you for the question.
I think that at least the conversations that I've been having in my classroom are, we're moving from understanding and making sense of what is happening to more action-oriented questions. So exactly that question, how do we move forward? What is our role as individuals in these communities? And I have been empowering my students to use their knowledge and education to go out into their communities, get involved with the rec centers, get involved with, because I teach high school, so after school opportunities where they can help tutor maybe their younger siblings and other people who go specifically to Curtis Bay for Benjamin Franklin. They're very close. And so I think that that's what I've been doing and making sure that they know what to do now that cool. They have this knowledge.
Corey Gillis.
And I typically look at it in a broader sense. When I did my undergrad at Morehouse College down in Atlanta, there was such a large emphasis on just education, on pushing as hard as you can to be successful as you can within the realm of education and academics. And I take that into my classroom, getting students to first value that education, to seek out more information and become better people as a result of being academically excellent. I think that's how we get past it, because when you become familiar with your history, you'll become familiar with situations that are going to occur, because history is bound to repeat itself. And so education is that key, is that gateway to
Well, I think you made your point pretty well, Corey Gillis. Jeray, I wanted to ask you in particular about I don't want to call it an exercise, that makes it sound somehow detached from the reality. But your sister teaches in your home state, Washington State.
Yes.
And you made a connection between her students and your students.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
My sister.
Your sister made the connection.
Yeah.
Okay.
She contacted me and said, hey, we've been talking a lot about what's been happening in Baltimore, and my students have developed a list of questions that if your students feel comfortable and are willing to answer, we can start a dialogue to help her students really understand how the people of Baltimore and the students of Baltimore are thinking about these issues.
So this was in the weeks right after the riot. And it's hard to summarize. I've read some of the comments, but tell me the kinds of questions and the kinds of answers.
So a lot of the questions focused on whether the students thought that all police were racist. They wanted to know if the students felt safe in their communities. They wanted to know why. Why are you rioting? Why are you doing this kind of violent act to them? Because they were searching for that meaning, I'm sure, like everybody else. Mm-hmm. So that was really kind of the central point of the questions.
And were you struck by the replies that you got from your own students?
I think I was struck. I mean, I'm constantly in awe of what the students say and do. But for me, it's a little less tempered because I'm with them every day. Mm-hmm. And so I was really struck by the responses that my sister sent from the teachers that read their responses, the students that read their responses, and how appreciative and humble they were.
Let me read just a couple of the responses that were in your email back to your sister, just to show how varied the responses. One student said, quote, "I know someone who rioted. I think it's going to be effective for individuals because we are hurting. Our city was destroyed before Monday. You just couldn't see it," close quote. And somebody else said, "I think violence is necessary because nothing else has worked," close quote. And yet, then the third response, quote, "I hate what is going on. They are destroying our neighborhoods and just continuing and validating what they say about us. We did act like animals." And somebody else said, quote, "I don't know why they are so angry. Black on black crime is so much worse than what any police can do, and they ain't saying anything about that," close quote. I was just struck, and it goes, there were just multiple comments with a lot of different opinions. Comments that seem well thought out and carefully thought out, but reaching very different conclusions. And Corey, you're kind of nodding as you listen to this. Does that not surprise you that there's such a range of reaction from
well,
from the
kids?
Well,
it resonates with a lot of the thoughts that I have within myself. You know, it just amazes me that people from such an early age often has these opinions, and sometimes they're overlooked because it comes from children. And so I just think that definitely you need to find ways to make sure that children have a voice and they're able to share out of the things they want, because they'll tell you. You go into Calverton, these kids are more than willing to share their opinions with you. So I think we got to find ways to, you know, put them in positive places in which they're able to willingly share their opinions.
Was that going on in your school before the challenge of the unrest?
In terms of students having a voice?
Yeah, in terms of them having a space to express it.
I think definitely beforehand, it could have been more developed. I don't think that they have the space and opportunity enough to have a voice. It seems to take some extreme situation where we go back to allowing students to really share out on the things that they want. And I think urban teachers, they did a good job at prepping me for that in terms of getting students to talk. One of the things we worked on was developing questioning for the students. So I, you know, definitely in mathematical practice and just in life practice, developing questions to help students, you know, share out what they're thinking and their processes. And so,
and if I can just add on, sure. I think that is a great question for everybody to acknowledge and to answer, because, you know, if this was so student directed, it's obvious that the students have opinions about these things and they want to be heard. And they really followed a system that they knew was going to get them heard. Whether or not we agree with that system or not, we still need to acknowledge that and help them, like the responses where they think the violence and the rioting is going to be effective, teach them and help guide them to different responses, and acknowledge the power that the students do have and the voices that they have.
We're going to take another quick break here, and when we come back, more with teachers Jeray Kelly and Corey Gillis. Plus, in honor of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra's 100th anniversary, the world premiere of a film and symphony about the city's past and present. Still a few minutes for your questions and comments about teaching in the aftermath of the Freddie Gray unrest. Join our conversation by sending an email to midday@wypr.org or by phoning us at 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. A year later, how have Baltimore City's teachers and students been affected by the death of Freddie Gray and the rioting that followed? I'm speaking with Corey Gillis, a sixth grade mathematics teacher at Calverton Elementary Middle School, and Jeray Kelly, a ninth grade mathematics teacher at Benjamin Franklin High School at Masonville Grove. Oh, Tom has left us. We had a caller from Curtis Bay who wanted to make a comment, but I'm not quite sure exactly what Tom was going to say. Oh, Tom is here. Tom, welcome to Midday.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. Hello. You're on the air, Tom.
Yes, I'd like to first salute your guests for doing so good a job at combating cynicism. And I'd also like to say that not only like their leadership is like on your show today is showing what leaders they are and how students and young people are motivated by leadership, that there's got practical results. You see, some of the students at Franklin have been fighting an incinerator, a garbage incinerator that's supposed to come into their neighborhood. And I think they've been extremely effective, even though some reports in the newspaper seem to dismiss them as young people. And a lot of times people, when they're young, are dismissed. And it's good to see that young people can have respect when they're fighting for their communities and their neighborhoods.
Tom, I appreciate the call. You've elicited a little cheer, silent cheer here from Jure Kelly. Thank you for your comment. What is your sense, if you can both of you sort of summarize it, of how your students are, and I realize you're with a different set of students now in a different school, Jure, but has the thinking of students changed much since those days right after the riot? I mean, are they feeling more empowered? Are they feeling as frustrated as they were? Is it different by each student, or is there a sense that you get of the group of students you're working with?
It's definitely different for each student. I do think the students feel that they do have more of a voice community-wise. They have more of a voice and more of an impact. However, I just don't know if the students believe that their voice is powerful enough, right? The Freddie Gray, you know, the trial's been on hold for a while now, right? So
they're going to resume in May, yeah.
Right. So it's just in this age, they sort of believe an immediate sense of reward. Mm-hmm. Or immediate incentive, and just that they had to wait so long, I think, they've either put it in the back burner or they just don't believe that they can make that much change. I think our jobs, our responsibilities as teachers, as role models, as mentors, is to put emphasis on the process and have hope and faith that the process is going to get us to our desired outcome.
I want to ask you about that in a minute, but I want to turn to Jure and get your sense of whether the attitudes of students are similar now or whether they've changed in 11 and a half months.
Well, this is the first year that I've been at Benjamin Franklin, and so mm-hmm. I can't speak to how they were last year. Mm-hmm. But what's really interesting about being at Benjamin Franklin, which is a kind of removed community from where the initial unrest happened, it's interesting to listen to them and say, like, well, they did that, you know, not me. Whereas when I was at ACE, when it happened in that community, they were very much we, mm-hmm. and they were more inclusive with their language. But the students that I still am in contact with from ACE and the teachers that I am still in contact with, they tell me that they have to constantly remind the students that it's still happening and that you need to kind of keep up with it. It's not just this
one. It's still happening. Meaning.
Oh, sorry. The Freddie Gray trials. The students may, you know, they may or may not know that that's happening. And how they kind of, if they want to do it on their own, how do they get that information? Watch the news, go online, read about it, and make sure that the students are kind of being a little more self-directed with that. Because we still, as teachers, have other curriculum and other things that we need to teach them.
Corey, I want to pick up on the phrase you used a minute ago, students keeping an eye on the desired outcome. And I'm making the assumption, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that for many of your students, the desired outcome would be guilty verdicts. So I'm raising the question of, first of all, am I right about that? And secondly, what's your expectation if there aren't guilty verdicts, or at least not consistent guilty verdicts?
So the desired outcome would be a guilty verdict. We've seen across the country that may not necessarily have happened. So we know that it's not 100% concrete that a guilty verdict is going to happen. In terms of that outcome, I do not believe something like the unrest that occurred is going to happen again.
You don't?
No, I think community leaders have seem to have a better grasp on what happened. I think our elected officials have an understanding of how to handle the situation a little better, definitely different from what happened before. I think within classrooms, as educators, we have the ability to, you know, give significant inputs to avoid situations like that from occurring again. So I don't see that level of unrest happening. I do see a lot of discussion. I see a lot of counseling may be needed. And we're going to have to, if in the event that there is a verdict other than guilty, I think that there's going to need to be a lot of positive reinforcement and almost hope instilled within students, because they shouldn't walk around thinking that my life is endangered, my life is at risk from the people who may necessarily, who are, you know, going to protect us. So, that confidence needs to be instilled, and they need to learn how to and be taught how to maneuver in this new world.
Jere, Kelly, you've got some events planned about the anniversary of Freddie Gray's death.
Yes. So
in the riot.
In our high school, we have to do service learning projects with our students because they require a certain amount of service learning hours, which are basically lessons around just kind of civic duty, different financial literacy, things like that. And so I'm planning to do a 3-day lesson that I received from going to a voluntary professional development at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum. And so they gave me a binder full of resources, guided questions, everything to implement with my students. So that's what I plan to do. I'm also planning to...
This on the anniversary of the... around the
anniversary. The last week of April, I think, is when I'll implement it. But I also... You know, I've read Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, which I'll have excerpts for the students, and also Dee Watkins' The B-Side, which I want them to read as well, which really gives great, awesome perspectives about police brutality and different things that really extend humanity to the other side, to the police, and I think are going to really help my students understand, like, where the police are coming from, which I think is important for them. Because they want to educate the police. They're now at a point where they want to, you know, have these conversations. They feel empowered to have these conversations. But first, they need to understand where they're coming from.
Well, I really appreciate you both giving us some insight into what you've done so far. And I wish you luck with the next phases of this, because it is a continuing conversation. Thank you so much. Corey Gillis and Jere Kelly, teachers in the Baltimore City Public Schools. Thank you. In the few minutes we have left, another approach to understanding the city. That music is the final movement of composer Kevin Putz's Credo String Quartet. Kevin Putz is a faculty member at the Peabody Institute and a Pulitzer Prize-winning composer. His newest orchestral work, The City, is premiering this week. It was co-commissioned by the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra in honor of its 100th anniversary and by Carnegie Hall in honor of its 125th anniversary. Kevin Putz is on the line. Kevin Putz, welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much.
So The City is a multimedia piece. Tell us about how the visual content fits with the music.
Well, it's interesting that when I was asked to write the piece by Marion Alsop maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it was her desire to accompany the music with a film and by James Bartolomeo, who she had worked with before. And we didn't really know how to approach it exactly. I had never worked with a filmmaker before. We had a lot of sort of back and forth, but in the end, basically, I just wrote an orchestra piece, and I had a certain idea of the episodes that the piece would move through and the shape of the piece. And then James actually took the computer file from this, you know, the piece I wrote, which has some kind of, you know, playback of orchestral sounds, and he made a film based on what he heard.
And what are you accomplishing in the music? What is your goal?
Well, initially, Marin asked me to write this piece and celebrate the American city, you know, specifically Baltimore, but for it to be more generally about different aspects of many urban areas in the United States, and that was very open-ended. Maybe about their history, about the people, about the way that they've grown and in some cases diminished over the years and then regrew. But after the events of last April, the Freddie Gray death and the rioting around it, the piece really had to take on a new direction. And I was about a fourth of the way into the piece when that happened, and I realized that it needed to be a much deeper kind of statement, which would embody anger and also the potential of healing as well.
But this piece was to reflect Baltimore or urban centers in a broader sense?
Well, both, actually. We had planned to use images from Baltimore, and that's what James has done. He's taken a lot of different images, archival footage of Baltimore over the years, you know, going back a long way, and put them together in a very beautiful way. But, you know, I think that it could be about the, you know, could be more generally about the American city, because the piece starts with images of the infrastructure of buildings, architecture, churches, spires, you know, sort of broad cityscapes, and then it focuses in on people, and the music changes very drastically at that point. And you know, those people are people that were filmed in Baltimore, but they could be anybody.
Well, that's what I wanted to hear you talk about. Is so Baltimore's history, including the events of last April and since, you see as speaking to the broader experience of cities.
Yeah, I think so. Sadly, the events of last April are not entirely particular to Baltimore, as we know, and you know, there are there's a vast gulf between different peoples and different cities financially, you know, economically, and it unfortunately creates a lot of the kinds of situations that we saw in Baltimore last April.
So we have just a tiny bit of time left. What would you like people to think of when they hear about the city that's premiering this week? What is the idea?
Yes, I think there's definitely a kind of savage kind of brutality to it, a coldness, a kind of grayness to it, to much of the music, but also a vibrancy and an energy that represents the diversity of life in the city in the most positive way. And but then it builds up to a real crisis, a real kind of angry upheaval. But then afterwards, there are images of the kind of the more positive things that happened following the riots, expressions of mutual understanding and reaching across lines, which is in the film and is also in the music. So I think the piece ends with a real feeling of optimism.
Kevin Putz, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Information about the city is available at bsomusic.org. The city is premiering this week, Thursday night at the Music Center at Stratford, Friday, 8 p.m. at the Joseph Meyerhoff Symphony Hall, and Saturday night at Carnegie Hall in New York. I want to thank our guests. I also want to thank the Diz for supplying lunch for Midday Guests. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington and features signature burgers, wings, steaks, jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast on weekends on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. And thank you for listening. 2016 session of the General Assembly wraps up in about 11 hours. We'll be here at noon tomorrow to talk about what it did and didn't accomplish. Hope you'll be with us. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay up. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.